In order for us to step towards the life we want and the things we're desiring, more often than not, those things have flavorings of something in the past that was dangerous. So there's not going to be a day where it just suddenly feels so good. It means when we take a tolerable step, our nervous system's going to say to us, essentially, I don't think that's safe. I don't think that's safe. But if I make the step small enough, our nervous system will allow for it to happen. Because it's like, well, maybe that's just a little dangerous. You can do that thing. But most people get stuck in trying to take steps that are too big, and then they can't actually complete it.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
It's Violet Benson, your favorite meme queen and the big sis you didn't ask for, but need. Welcome to Almost Adulting.
Almost Adulting. Almost Adulting.
Are you ready?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a brand new Almost Adulting, the largest self-love podcast and movement, your number one destination for personal growth and mental health. I am your big sister and your host, Violetta, and today my special guest is Sarah Baldwin. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Of course. Sarah Baldwin is a somatic experiencing practitioner and trauma coach trained in polyvagal interventions and on the training team at the Polyvagal Institute. She specializes in somatic trauma healing, attachment work, inner child work, and nervous system regulation. And I'm very excited to share her insight with you guys. Today, we're going to be talking about different attachment styles like avoidant, anxious, candid to date. Also, what is a nervous regulation system? How does it affect our happiness? And are we currently stuck in life because we're not taking care of our nervous regulation system and so on? And there's all these really fun words today, new words that we're going to be learning. So, hello.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's really good to be here.
Of course. How are you?
I'm doing really great. I'm feeling mostly regulated, which we're going to learn about what that means in a little bit.
Can you tell when someone's not regulated, or is it something that they more feel versus you being able to note?
I can tell because it's what I do professionally. And so I'm really good at noticing the subtle cues of someone's system and what's happening and how we're holding our bodies and what's happening with our eyes and the prosody of our voice or the sound of our voice and many other things. Mm-hmm. But everyone's very good at masking. So we're really good at covering up what's inside and presenting to the world something different as a protective strategy. So it's like, you know, when we walk down, you're walking down the street and someone says, hey, how are you doing? And their expectation is that you just say, fine, how are you? Yeah. And I might not actually be fine, but I have a way of being able to present different than what's happening inside. And we're all really, really, really good chameleons, really good at doing that. So I'd say most people might not be able to pick up on it, but energetically, you can feel something going on.
Would you say I'm regulated or not regulated?
You seem quite regulated right now.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm good at masking it.
Thank you. You don't feel regulated right now.
I don't feel regulated.
So when we've done something in a habituated way, meaning we've done it over and over and over again, that can be a place that our system says, when I do this, I feel a sense of safety. So for you, you've done this a lot, right? Like interviewing with people and doing your podcast. So your system is saying, I know how to do that, and that gives me a sense of safety. So as you're doing that, more often than not, what happens is our systems can present in a way that appears to be regulated or have some regulation online. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Versus if you were doing something brand new right now that you've never done before, that has nothing to do with what you do for a living, it'd probably be easier to notice some of that underlying dysregulation because it wouldn't be contained in this sense of safety that you have from doing something you know how to do so well.
That makes sense. So what is the nervous system for people who don't know, including myself? Where is it?
Yeah. So when we talk about the nervous system, I'm referring to something called the autonomic nervous system. It's subcortical. That means it lives in your body, so below the thinking brain. And it actually travels all the way from our brainstem. It goes, part of it goes up into our head and our inner ear, and then it goes all the way down into our diaphragmatic region or our lower gut region. And so it's really this nervous system, there's two major components or parts of it. One is called the parasympathetic nervous system, and the other is called the sympathetic nervous system. So a term that has become quite popularized and maybe a little obscure, is called the vagus nerve. So the vagus nerve means wander. It's the biggest nerve in the body. And it has all of these nerve endings, or think of it like kind of like tentacles. And these nerve endings touch every organ system in our body. So the autonomic nervous system really encapsulates or encompasses most parts of our human body or experience. Now, subcortical, meaning it lives in our bodies, that means it doesn't speak a verbal language because it's not connected to our thinking brain, our prefrontal cortex or our cortical thinking brain. So this is why when we are experiencing regulation or dysregulation in our nervous system and we try to, you know, when you try to like rationalize yourself out of an experience you're having, like there's nothing to be anxious about right now, or there's that it doesn't always work. Like you can think it, but you might not be able to feel the shift. And that's a result of the nervous system being in the body, not being connected to our thinking brain. So a really important thing to understand about the nervous system is in order to address it, we have to speak the language of this nervous system, which is not a verbal language. It's a somatic language, like when you introduced me that word somatic. Somatics really just means the language of the body.
Oh, that explains why, for example, they say in therapy and a lot of different places when it comes to, let's say, one way to help with anxiety or when you're about to feel like you're about to have a panic attack or you have a lot of thoughts that feel like everything is the end of the world, when you just start to say, okay, I just need to be more present. I am sitting on a couch and you touch the couch.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, there's a pillow next to me. And you start touching different things and it helps you be present and suddenly kind of slows down all of your chaotic thinking and you're able to kind of calm down. Is that kind of what you're talking about? That's a somatic practice.
Right. Ah, cool. So you're getting this. So this nervous system, and this is so important to understand. This autonomic nervous system is responsible at any given moment for our thoughts. So it's what fuels our thoughts. It fuels every sensation you ever have in your body. So tightness, butterflies in your stomach, all of those things are a result of your nervous system. It is responsible for every feeling we ever have in our lives. It's responsible for every behavior we have. So everything we ever do or don't do is a result of what's happening in the nervous system. It's responsible for, I think I might have said this already, but our thoughts. So every thought we have. It's responsible for how I perceive myself, you, the world around me. So it literally affects every single area of our lives and depicts or determines how we experience all the things that I just named. So it's imperative that we understand it, because if we don't, I think about it this way. This nervous system, it's like, imagine it like a vehicle inside of us. And if we don't understand it and we aren't in control of it, it's almost like we get flung out of the driver's seat and it takes over on cruise control. And then it's doing things like behaviors that we have that later we say to ourselves, why did I do that? Why did I say that thing? Or why did I have that thought, like those thoughts that don't serve me? Well, that's because your nervous system took over on autopilot and it was functioning for you with the primary purpose. And this is really important to understand. The primary purpose our nervous system has is to keep us safe. Like that's its only goal, to keep us safe and alive at all costs, no matter what. And it will do anything, like literally it'll even eat our own muscle tissue in order to keep us in safety if it has to. And there's two primary ways that we experience the nervous system, two overarching ways, either, and this might be familiar to listeners, either regulated, we experience it in regulation, or we experience it in what's called dysregulation. And regulation is really what we're all looking for and don't even realize it. Regulation is where we experience things like joy, happiness, connection, aliveness, flow, creativity. Like in your work when you feel like, oh, it's just coming through and I feel so creative. That can only happen in regulation. Connection to others, connection to myself, peace, freedom, all the things we want happen or experienced in regulation. And this is why a lot of us, we might have the physical things, like I have the money, or the house, the career, whatever, the family, but I don't feel happy. And the reason is because I'm not experiencing those things from a place of regulation.
Got it. So even if you have good things in your life, it doesn't matter if you're not regulated, then you won't be able to really see what's in front of you.
Exactly. You won't be able to enjoy it. Because when we're regulated, I like to think about it like, it's like our nervous system is standing at our side. I mean, like it's not blocking us. It's ready to protect us if it has to, but it's not actively protecting us. And as the result of that, if like you can imagine it standing at my side, I'm available and exposed. I can receive abundance in my life. I can receive connection. I can step forward. I'm not stuck. But when we're dysregulated, so again, there's only two ways to experience it, regulation or dysregulation. When we're dysregulated, it's kind of like our nervous system is standing in front of us. It's protecting us, like blocking us. It's keeping out anything that it sees as dangerous, but this also keeps us from stepping into the things that we want or fully experiencing the things that we want when we're dysregulated. And the majority of people are spending so much of our lives dysregulated, and we might not even know that's what's happening. And certainly most people don't know how to change that experience.
Having a dysregulated nervous system is more common than not.
Yeah, incredibly common. And now I think more than ever in our world, we have chronic dysregulation. So meaning people are perpetually dysregulated. And there's actually only two reasons we become dysregulated. One is because we're actually in danger right now. So you have real danger happening to you. Like there's a lion chasing me and I'm going to die. We'd want to be dysregulated because dysregulation, again, is active self-protection. So my system will protect me. It wouldn't be very adaptive, like if me and you were, I don't know, we're like in the middle of, you know, nowhere and we're hiking and there's a grizzly bear and I say to you like, I'm so relaxed. Isn't this so beautiful? You'd say like, that is not adaptive. Run. Like, don't be relaxed right now. So when we're not in safety, we want to be dysregulated. But the majority of people are dysregulated not because of that. We're dysregulated because our nervous system is perceiving danger where there's not actually danger. That is one of the biggest problems in our world.
Got it. So dysregulation has more to do with us perceiving danger where there's no actual danger.
Yeah.
So when we think something is the end of the world, when we think everyone hates us, nothing will ever get better, this is the worst this can ever be. Oh my God, everyone's talking about me. Everyone's looking at me. I need to go home. I should have never left my house. Those type of thoughts, just as an example, versus there's a grizzly bear in front of me and he's going to eat me.
Yeah. And so what is super, and people listening are probably like, oh my gosh, I have those thoughts or similar thoughts, right? So the reason why we have our nervous system is perceiving danger where there might actually be safety is because inside of each of us, we have what I call this like database or receptacle of past information. So think of it like a computer system in your brain. It's filled with every lived experience you've ever had. So it's filled with, I'll give examples from my life. It's filled with my childhood trauma. That's not anything that's not resolved, so healed yet. It's filled with those experiences in middle school, those experiences with a partner that cheated on me, those experiences where I had chronic illness. All the experiences are inside of there. So the first line of defense in the autonomic nervous system is called neuroception. Think of it like a threat detector, and it lives in our brainstem, like literally, like it's like a literal threat detector, and it looks out into the world every millisecond of our life, which is really fucking fast. And it says, is that safe, dangerous, or life threatening? Is that safe, dangerous, or life threatening? Are these lights safe, dangerous, or life threatening? Is your cat safe, dangerous, or life threatening? Is that person texting me and saying we need to talk safe, dangerous, or life threatening? So the way that it decides is by looking to the database, does this in a millisecond, and it says, what intel do we have on confrontation? So let's take the example of a text. I get a text, there's no punctuation, and a friend says, hey, can you talk at 4? I really need to talk to you about something. And there's no exclamation point. I don't know what they mean. So my threat detector looks to the database, and let's say it looks to my childhood, and it says, what intel do we have on confrontation? Oh, confrontation meant violence, or it meant love being withheld, or it meant I was made to be bad or wrong, etc. So then if that's what the threat detector does, it's going to say, this must be dangerous, because in the past, something similar was dangerous. This is the perceived threat. So now in that moment, all of a sudden, my nervous system calls or connects to, there's actually three states of dysregulation in our nervous system. So the threat detector gets to choose from three options to protect me. And it chooses one of those three. One, for example, is called our sympathetic nervous system, which is where anxiety, worry, frustration, fear, terror, rage, racing thoughts live, tension in our body, racing heart, sweaty palms, all of that. So let's say it chooses that one. So all of a sudden, my system is reminded of my childhood. What did I need to do then? I'm going to do the same thing now. And now I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, are they mad at me? Do they not want to be my friend anymore? I'm recounting a dinner that we had. And I'm like, holy shit, did I say that thing? Should I not have said that thing about the guy they're dating? I was just trying to be loving, but maybe they took it the wrong way. And now they're not going to love me. And should I text them 17 times? I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should. And I can't think about anything else that day besides the fact that my friend might not want to be my friend, or my guy I'm dating might not want to date me anymore. And my friend might just want to talk about plans for the weekend. That's perceived threat. And that could mean for someone that whole day, my nervous system is going to be actively protecting me in the form of dysregulation when there's not actually danger. It's just perceiving danger.
If you're a wine lover like me, I'm going to let you in on a little secret, okay? I found the most personalized wine club that has amazing wines and exclusive perks, and it's called First Leaf. I've been using them since last year, and as a First Leaf member, I get to discover new wines that I'm guaranteed to enjoy. That is because First Leaf gets to know unique preferences. Like, to start, I basically had to answer a few quick questions on their website about like what flavors I like, how often I drink wine, and if I prefer red, white, or rosé. Based on my answers, then First Leaf curated an amazing selection of wines just for me. And when I rate those wines, my wine selection then continuously keeps getting more tailored. How cool is that? Like, I normally only like white wine, so I started with white. Then I wanted to kind of mix it up, and I started getting different types of red wines from First Leaf. And I was looking for like some sweeter ones. Then I asked my friends what they wanted, because I've been doing a lot of different like hosting parties at my house recently. I told myself this year I'm going to be more of a hostess. And First Leaf has made my life so much easier. My friends have been loving these wines, okay? Best of all, I get to choose when I want my box delivered and how often I get new assortments of wine. Plus, being part of the First Leaf Wine Club also has loads of perks. For example, as a member, I get access to their incredibly helpful wine concierge. So if I want wine pairing advice, or I want to talk to somebody about the wines in my box, I can always speak with one of their experts at any time. Plus, I get member exclusive pricing on every order. That's probably the best part. So join the club today and discover new wines that you will love with First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/adulting to get your first box. That is tryfirstleaf.com/adulting, tryfirstleaf.com/adulting. Plus, I will make sure to include this in the link bio of today's episode. So I'm telling you guys, this is the best club you will ever be a part of. Okay? You're welcome.
Right. That reminds me of if my agent or someone I work with will text me and be like, hey, can you get on a call later on? I usually, I'm a pretty calm person normally, but the minute I get a text like that from work related, the first thing I'll say, am I in trouble? Did I do something wrong? Can you kind of give me an idea? And then right away, to calm myself down, tell myself, it's fine. If they drop you, if they fire you, you'll be okay. Life will be fine. You will move on. And it was just like, I went from A to Z so fast. And I'll be like, no, I just really want to talk about this one deal that we have. And I'll be like, oh, okay, well, just say that.
Yeah, right. Well, by the way, our nervous systems need, and this is important for everyone to know, three things to be in regulation. We need context, so an understanding of what's happening. If our nervous system does not understand at any given moment what is happening, it's going to dysregulate us, because it needs to be able to know if we're safe or not. And if it's not sure about something, it's going to say, okay, I'm going to protect you, like, again, stand in front of you, dysregulate you, because I don't know what to expect. So if we're ever finding ourselves dysregulated, we want to ask ourselves, do I not have context around something? Context is important. Choice. Our nervous systems do not like to be cornered. So if we feel like we don't have choice in something, that's a recipe for dysregulation. And then connection. We need, which we were talking about before, our nervous systems we're animals and we're social creatures. We need connection in order to be regulated. And we can do connect a lot of ways. Like everybody listening to this podcast right now, we're connecting. And it doesn't matter that it's not real time. You're connecting to both of our voices right now. And if you're watching video or faces, and that creates connection. Also, of course, connection to animals, loved ones, saying hi to someone on a walk, connection to nature. So we need those three things to be regulated.
Okay, so that kind of tells you why when you're at a disagreement with a partner, even a friend, and usually when you come off like, you never do this and you do that, the partner feels like they don't have a choice, and then they get defensive because it also lacks a connection in that moment. That's why they always say, if you're trying to, quote unquote, win an argument or try to fight to come together instead of fight to come apart, you have to say, hey, can we please talk? I'm so sorry if I did something to you the other day that hurt your feelings, because I also felt this way. And then the other person feels connected and more invited to the conversation. Then they say, well, you know what? I'm sorry for how I acted and so on and so on. Because then they feel like they have a choice in the matter of forgiving or not forgiving and to have a conversation. And they feel the connection because they feel like the other person understands them.
When we're in a relational dynamic, so any, especially romantic partnership, this is what reminds our nervous systems the most of our childhood, because we have that database. Remember, we all have that. So all of our childhood experiences are in there. And remember, the threat detector likes similarities, not identical matches, just similarities. So if I have a romantic partner, like who I'm dating, they start to become like family. They're my most important person. They're the person that I lean on. They're the person that I look for connection and love and all these other things. So guess what it looks to? It looks to the database and says, what intel do I have on your most important person, a relationship with them, what love and all of that? It looks to our childhoods. So here's what happens. Let's say, you know, like we're in a relationship, a romantic relationship. Both of our systems are doing that. So let's say you say something to me like, some constructive feedback. Like, you know, I love when you ask me questions. And the other day when I did this really important thing that meant a lot to me and you didn't ask me a question, it just, it didn't feel great. So what happens is my threat detector looks to my database and it says, what information do I have on getting things wrong? So maybe in my childhood, I was shamed for getting things wrong, or love was withheld when I got things wrong. So even though you are not doing anything like what my caregivers did, my nervous system says, this seems similar. And all of a sudden, I might shut down and just like, I go blank, I disappear. I don't want to have this conversation. I can't talk about this right now. Or maybe I do something like I get defensive, because again, in the past, it wasn't safe to have a disconnection or a rupture or in the relationship. And so my system defends me as if you're my mother. Not as if you're you, as if you're my mom. And now I'm doing the same thing that I did when I was a child, which is maybe I shut down. And then in my shutting down, your system is reminded of your childhood. And I'm just going to make something up. Let's say you had a dad that was not emotionally available and shut down. So now your system is reminded of your childhood. And now you're responding as if you're in your childhood. I'm responding as if I'm in my childhood. We're both not actually present to what's happening now. And we're defending ourselves from each other. And a tiny little, you know, rupture becomes this big fight, because now we're not even actually arguing about what's happening here. We're actually literally, it's almost like we travel time and we're back in those childhood experiences. And this is what everyone is experiencing in their relationships, which is why relationships can be so hard.
Right, platonic or romantic.
Yeah.
So if the nervous system is connected to how I feel, then yeah, of course, my first question would be, then how do I feel better, or how do I always feel good?
Yeah. My response to that is always, well, we can't change what we don't understand. So the most important thing is to begin understanding this, what I sometimes call this vehicle that lives inside of us or that we inhabit, because we can't change what's happening inside of the nervous system until we fully grasp how it functions. So within our autonomic nervous system, there are four primary states or experiences that we can have. The first is called our ventral vagal complex, and that's a state of regulation. So think of that, classify that as like good experiences that we're wanting to have. Then we have three states of dysregulation, or we can classify those as experiences we don't want to have, or active self-protection. The first of those is called our sympathetic nervous system, or fight or flight. So we're lots of movement here and lots of doing here. So an overwhelm of energy in that state. Then we have our dorsal vagal complex, which is our state of shutdown. So it's the opposite. It's no energy and or energy conservation in our body. And then we have a state called freeze, which is equal parts sympathetic and dorsal coming together, rendering us stuck. So you can think of like a deer in headlights. I have all this energy, but I'm trapped.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the four primary states. And within each of those states, there's a variety of experiences that we can have.
Okay, so let's dive into those.
One of them is our state of regulation. It's called our ventral vagal complex. And again, as I said earlier, that's the thing that we all want, that we don't even know that we want, that we want. And when you have regulation in your nervous system, you can step into the life that you desire with ease. You can feel good in your body. You also have health in your body. So physical health can only happen when we're predominantly regulated. And so that really is the work of all healing is, how do I support my nervous system to spend the predominant amount of my time in a state of regulation? So again, we go there when our nervous system thinks we're safe, or a threat detector thinks we're safe. Now, there are three states that we go to when our nervous system or our threat detector says, I don't think this is safe. In the first place that it chooses, when it thinks we're in danger, but maybe it's not life-threatening danger, it's danger that we can do something about, it calls in our sympathetic nervous system, or what's often referred to as fight or flight. A lot of people probably know that term, fight or flight. And we go here because our system is saying, okay, there's danger, but I think there might be a way out of this, and there might be something I can do to get out of it. So when we're here, there's, well, first, really important to understand, this is a whole, it's like it's a giant country. There's so many different ways you can experience it, from a mild experience like, I feel just a little agitated, or I just feel unsettled. I'm just having a hard time fully relaxing. Even though I'm in this bath, I can't like fully relax. That's more mild. Then it increases to feeling like I feel kind of worried, or I feel sort of frustrated. And now I'm feeling anxious and having racing thoughts, or I'm feeling angry, all the way down to terror or rage or panic attacks. So as you can see, that's like a very wide net that it holds. When we're here, we're going to have racing thoughts because remember, our nervous system affects our thinking. So the thoughts are all going to be about how I have to do something now. If I don't do something now, everything's going to fall apart. It feels like there's a ticking time bomb, like there's not enough time. So everything is urgent, even though it's not, you know, something could actually wait. But to our nervous system, it's going to say, no, it can't wait. And once we resolve one thing, it's going to say, yeah, but what about this other thing? And once we set this goal and we reach that goal, it says, yeah, but what about the next goal? Because there's people further along than me, and I have to keep, I'm purposely trying this on so everyone, people are probably going to say, she's talking really fast. But this is what it's like when we're here. We have tension in our bodies, disrupted sleep, headaches, shoulder pain, back pain, gut issues or GI issues.
And that falls under fight or flight?
All of that. Everything I'm describing falls under it. Yep.
Okay.
Social anxiety, of course. Having butterflies in our stomach, racing heart, feelings of agitation, frustration, anxiety, worry, panic. All of that is our sympathetic nervous system. So I think about it like there's too much energy in my body. It's like the porridge isn't too cold. It's not just right. It's too hot. There's just too much going on. And most people are, in our culture, are living in a chronic state of sympathetic, where it's like hustle culture. I gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. I wake up in the morning and there's so many things to do and I never stop and I'm just going all of the time. And I'm running in this state of dysregulation. And long term, that leads to health issues, that leads to a lot of problematic things in our life and not being able to feel fully free, kind of like a prisoner to this state. So that's one state of self-protection. There are two others. So the second state of self-protection, if our threat detector in our brainstem says, whoa, this isn't just dangerous, it's life-threatening, meaning like, I don't think we can get away from this thing. So this all comes from evolution. Like, let's say I'm running from a lion, but the lion's kind of far away. My nervous system's going to say, run. So I go into my sympathetic system. But if the lion gets so close that it has, it's like it's about to bite me, my nervous system says, there's no way you're going to get out of this. So instead, what we can do for you is I can help you leave your body so you don't have to feel the perpetual pain of what we can't stop, which is like so freaking brilliant. It's beautiful. If we've ever felt like people have let us down in our lives or that we're all alone, like when I learned this as someone who was neglected in my childhood, I was like, wow, I had this system that never left me. So for example, like me as someone who was neglected and abused, I couldn't leave my house as a kid. There was nothing that I could do about it, or you couldn't leave the school, you're bullied in or whatever. So our nervous system will say, well, if I can't leave this chronic neglect, or I can't leave this abuse. What we can do is leave your body so you don't have to feel the perpetual pain of what we can't stop. Mm-hmm. So when we go into dorsal, again, it's like a whole country, it starts with apathy. Like I just start to feel in a funk. I don't know. And if my friend's like, well, do you want to go to this place you love? And I'm like, not really. Like nothing feels exciting anymore. Work doesn't feel exciting. It feels like a malaise. I slept well, but I have no energy. I start to feel numb. So I actually don't know what I feel at all. I might be disconnected from feelings. If someone asks me, I actually don't know. I don't know how to let people help me. I don't know what my needs are. I feel numb. I start to feel hopeless, like I'm all alone or disconnected in the world, and then feeling depressed, all the way down to dissociated. There's levels of dissociation, but I don't feel fully here, or I don't know who I am, or this doesn't feel real. All of that is our dorsal system, and it's literally the opposite of that fight or flight sympathetic. So I don't have enough energy, and all my thoughts are going to be about how I can't, I'm not capable, I'm not able, it's never going to change, there's something was wrong with me, and so on and so forth. So those are like two polar opposite worlds of dysregulation in our nervous system. And then the very last one is called freeze, which is super common. Freeze is a combination of, think of it like equal parts, your sympathetic nervous system and your dorsal system come together at the very same time. And they're two equal and opposite forces. So when one comes together and the other, they render us stuck. So think like a deer in headlights. So I have all this energy inside, but I can feel trapped and frozen. And a simple example of a mild form of this is I get a text from someone and I'm like, oh God, I need to respond to that. I'll do it later. I'll do it later. I don't know. And then I think about it all day and then I don't do it. But then I think about it and I don't do it. And it's been 4 days and I think about it and I don't do it. And I'm like, holy shit, I need to text them, but I don't do the thing and I need to do the thing and I don't do the thing or my work. And it's this constant back and forth. Or you sit down to start that project and you're like, okay, I'm going to do this thing today and I need to do it because I don't want someone to take this idea. And then all of a sudden you sit down and you get overwhelmed and you're like organizing your junk drawer when you really need to do this thing and you're dancing around it all day but not doing the thing because you're frozen. And so that's our state. That's our state of freeze. And that's a pretty common one that a lot of people find themselves in. So think of it like equal and opposite forces. I have to, I can't inside, which render us stuck. And it takes a lot of energy to be in that state. Even though it can feel like we're not doing anything, we're doing so much when we're there. Even like this example of you're on a date, or I'm on a date, I'll say me, I'm on a date and I want to say, I'm like, I really want to say this thing. But then I think about it in my head, like, oh, should I say that thing? Are they going to think I'm weird? Maybe I shouldn't say that thing. And they're like, what are you thinking about? I'm like, nothing. So that's freeze. I'm not actually communicating the thing that's inside, but I'm going in this constant back and forth.
I noticed that when you spoke about, when you discuss our nervous system, you have now mentioned a couple of times that our nervous system has to do with protecting us, and it's all about when we feel safe and we don't feel safe, which kind of makes me remember or kind of makes me think of when you talk about safe and not safe, it brings me back to our childhood about with habits that we adapt as children in order to protect us, in order to feel safe, in order for, you know, it's kind of a survival tactic that protected us back then as children. Would you say that our nervous system is in a lot of ways attached to our experiences as children and to our past trauma?
Absolutely. The primary reason for human suffering is not the lacking of safety, although a very important caveat, there are many people, millions of people in the world who don't have safety. And so many of us are actually safe and yet we're dysregulated. Why would that be? I'm safe. I have a safe home. I'm not in danger, but I'm dysregulated all the time. Why? It's because exactly what you're explaining. We all have, as I mentioned, this internal computer system or database inside of us with every experience I've ever had is in there. And so that threat detector in my nervous system is looking out into the world every moment of my life, and it's saying, what does it remind me of? And it looks to my past. So many of us are having responses in our present moment that aren't actually based in what's happening today. It's a response from the past. My system is saying, this wasn't safe in the past, it must not be safe now. This wasn't safe in the past, it must not be safe now. Belonging wasn't safe at school, I must not belong as a 38-year-old woman with friends. Like, it's doing the same thing. It's responding to things that happened a long time ago.
Right. And it's in a millisecond.
Yeah.
So it's not that we're actually like, oh, right, this has to do with my childhood. No. It's more your body just automatically right. responds. And then you react and you genuinely believe that your current reality is the true reality, when in fact, you may be dysregulated.
Exactly. You might be responding to something that happened 20 years ago. And this all happens subconsciously, like you just named, reflexively, meaning like I didn't have control over that. It happened super fast. I just went from feeling fine and safe to all of a sudden someone looked at me sort of weird and it reminded me of my aunt who was hypercritical and looked at me weird. And now all of a sudden I'm feeling small and insignificant. And that's because of how this system works.
Recently, I've been wearing some amazing coats. And when people have been asking where it's from, I was like, I actually didn't buy it. I rented it from Nuuly. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service that's all about helping you have fun, plus get creative with your style. Renting from Nuuly lets me shift gears in my wardrobe without a complete and completely expensive overhaul, okay? Every month, I get to rent 6 items from Nuuly's shared closet of over 17,000 styles for everything I have going on. Dressy stuff for occasions, trending going out clothes, casual tops and premium jeans for hanging around, sweaters, outwear, vacation fits, you name it. This past month, I got 5 coats and this beautiful dress with feathers on the arms. I'm obsessed with feathers and I love coats. So basically, I love that you get to try out trending styles, colors, silhouettes, and then you send them back for something new. I actually sent my package yesterday, so now I can order 6 new items for this month. Nuuly takes care of everything from shipping to laundry. I can even pause without paying a fee if I need to take a break for whatever reason. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any 6 styles each month. You choose whatever you want to rent for whatever you have going on. It's totally up to you. You also get access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. Everything from party dresses to premium denim, one-of-a-kind vintage pieces. Nuuly carries labels like Free People, From Rio, Selkie, For Love and Lemons, Anthropologie, A Goldie, Lisa Says Gaw, and so much more. Plus, they have inclusive sizing from extra small up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity and so on. It's also fast, free shipping and returns. The return was actually so easy, I was surprised. And they have professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundry facility. No laundry for you to worry about. And lastly, they have the option to buy what you love. And sometimes it's up to 75% off. That's really cool as well. So whether you're looking to save, I think renting from Nuuly means that you get to wear more while you spend less and curb that quote-unquote must buy something new feeling you get when there are events on the calendar while still feeling confident and excited about your wardrobe. Plus, it's fun. Nuuly gives you everything you need to get inspired, get creative, and explore your style without making any commitments. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Lastly, it's flexible. There are no fees. There's no late fees. There's no damage fees or fees to pause or cancel. So there's no big deal if you lose a button, spill something, or just need to take a break. Love that. Nuuly is a great value, $98 a month for any 6 styles. But right now, you can get $20 off of your first month of Nuuly when you sign up using my code adulting20. So just go to Nuuly.com. That is Nuuly with 2 U's, and enter my code adulting20 and sign up to get $20 off of your first month. I'm telling you, you guys are going to be obsessed with it as much as I am. Okay. Try it. I kind of like that you mentioned right now, I don't have control over it. Not that, obviously, I always tell everyone to take responsibility for their actions and their feelings and that we have control over everything. But I do feel a bit of a sense of relief when, because a lot of us, when we react a certain way, it's much harder to fix a situation when we suddenly look at ourselves and we think, you're such a fucking idiot. Why do you have to act this way? You're such a and it goes into such negative thoughts versus if you realized, well, I actually don't have control yet of my reactions and I'm reacting like this because of childhood. So it's automatic. It's part of my nervous system that's causing me to do this. I can fix it, but right now I genuinely don't have control because I'm not regulated. I think in that way, for a lot of people, it can kind of make you feel at ease, like, okay, maybe that wasn't really my fault. I have a choice to fix it and work on myself, but I can give myself some grace that it's just my nervous system automatically trying to protect me. It doesn't serve me anymore as an adult. What used to serve me as a child, that protection. But for me, having that thought kind of does put me at ease versus going to that negative emotions or thoughts like, you're in your 30s, you should know better by now.
Yeah, we're all so hard on ourselves. And just, you know, what's so important to also understand is when we do that, that's only going to exacerbate the dysregulation, meaning it's only going to make us feel worse. So none of us have control over that reflexive response. What we do have control over is what we do after. And what I really want everybody to know is this database that has past experience in it, we're also filling it with new experiences all the time. And there's something in therapeutic work called disconfirming experiences. A disconfirming experience is essentially any experience we have where we're showing our nervous system, hey, it's different now. It's not like the past anymore. Mm-hmm. Look at this. Hey, it's different now. I have this other experience where I was vulnerable with a friend and I told them what wasn't working and they met me and they were loving and kind. That gets stored in the database. And if we collect enough, because we give ourselves experiences that are different in our adult lives than they were in the past, relationship-wise, work-wise, etc., they get gathered in this database. And if we collect enough of them, what happens is our threat detector looks to a situation and it says, oh, yeah, that was dangerous in childhood, but we have so much evidence now that it's safe now for you to experience this. And in that moment, instead of me becoming dysregulated, mm-hmm. I don't. I feel good.
Okay, so then two follow-up to what you just said would be, one, doesn't that mean that that person then actually has to take that step forward? Because normally, if their nervous system is dysregulated, their first reaction before asking advice from a friend or whatnot is, I've been rejected in the past, so it's safer for me to not actually step forward. So what you're saying is where it's proven differently. Oh, it's different this time. I still have to take that leap, which I may not take if my nervous system telling me it's not safe. And then secondly, if my nervous system is dysregulated, so that's one question. But secondly, if my nervous system is dysregulated, I won't be able to see the reality that things are different. I will still be painting a reality where instead of paying attention to the fact that this time I did get that promotion, or this time people did agree with me, I'm going to look at that small little thing. Yeah, I got the promotion, but I didn't get a raise. It's just a title change. So again, I'm a failure. Or yeah, some people agree with me, but that one person didn't. So that just validates exactly how I was always feeling. So in those two things, I just feel like that would still continue to be in that stuck, because I won't take that leap because it doesn't feel safe. So you actually have to do it. And then B, if my mind is still in the past or thinking in a negative state of mind, I won't be able to pay attention that this time the situation is different.
Mm. So in terms of that first question, what we want to work on is what I call taking tolerable steps towards the things that scare us. And there's two qualifiers of a tolerable step, or I include two qualifiers. One, I can actually complete it. Most of us are trying to take steps forward in our purpose, in our careers, in our lives that are bigger than our nervous systems are ready for. And if you find yourself always stuck, unable to do the thing, it means you're not taking tolerable steps. You're taking steps that are too big. So we literally want to break those down into bite-sized chunks that I can actually complete. And so if that means having a confrontational conversation, that might be too big. It might be today, I'm going to write down on a piece of paper what my truth is. That might be the tolerable step today, not calling a person. Then the next day it might be, I'm going to write it in an email, but not send it. And then the next day. And so we're building our capacity to be able to tolerate it. So that's the one qualifier of a tolerable step. The second is it will not feel good. And I work with a lot of people who are like, yeah, I'll do the thing when I feel good about it. And I say to them, well, you're going to wait around forever, because in order for us to step towards the life we want and the things we're desiring, more often than not, those things have flavorings of something in the past that was dangerous.
Right.
So there's not going to be a day where it just suddenly feels so good. It means when we take a tolerable step, our nervous system's going to say to us, essentially, I don't think that's safe. I don't think that's safe. But if I make the step small enough, our nervous system will allow for it to happen, because it's like, well, maybe that's just a little dangerous or a little unsafe. You can do that thing. But most people get stuck in trying to take steps that are too big and then they can't actually complete it.
Is that why people say do the things that make you uncomfortable? That's what you should do because it's your nervous system kind of scared to take a leap.
Yes, but the thing I hate about those sayings, like just do it, do the thing that makes you uncomfortable, is because what they don't understand is the nervous system, meaning if our nervous system's 500 million years old, a part of it, another part's 300 million, just to give you a sense of how adaptive and strong this thing is. I'm a very strong-willed person and I cannot outwill my nervous system. It will always win. So those sayings of like, just do it, go confront the thing. If your nervous system thinks that that thing is so dangerous, it won't let you. It'll stop you in your tracks and you're going to feel super stuck in your life. The qualifier is we have to make it tolerable, meaning make the step so small that your nervous system says, okay, you can do it. And if you compile enough of those, you get momentum and movement and forward momentum. And then what starts to occur is, like, let's say someone wants to start a podcast and like, holy shit, I feel scared to use my voice. I'm scared to be seen. And they look at your podcast and say, how am I going to do that tomorrow? And they haven't started it yet. Well, you're not going to. And your nervous system also doesn't have the capacity for it. Just like both of our nervous systems don't have the capacity for what we're going to do 5 years from now or even next year. So instead, for that person who wants to start the podcast, we'd have to start with tolerable steps, building my capacity. It's just me in my room alone, and I have 5 family members that are listening to it. And the more that I do this, the more my nervous system sees, because those are disconfirming experiences. It's safe to use your voice. It's safe to be seen. And then it feels easy.
That's why they always say to start small and do those little steps and celebrate your little wins. Okay, because I recall on Mark Groh's podcast, as you know, he's been on my podcast multiple times, Create the Love. You spoke about how in order to get the life that we are desiring, we must build our capacity to hold that life. So basically, as you were just saying, that would mean that the things we're currently desiring that we want so badly, it's for our current system is just too much. It's not working. And that's why we are pushing it away.
Yeah. And this is I've worked with like over 10,000 people at this point, and I have never met someone where this wasn't the case, that the things we desire most in life, the things that we're really wanting, like inside our soul that we can't put down, like it kind of haunt us, you know, those deep soul desires, more often than not, the things we desire most are things that were either inhibited, so not available, or dangerous in the past. Similarities were dangerous. So let's say that I'm working on a book. So someone wants to write a book, and that requires using your voice, being seen, being known, being heard, being vulnerable, taking up space, being exposed, being criticized. So if more often than not, what that means is I have a database that says it's not safe to use your voice. It's not safe to be seen in this way. It's not safe to take up space and so on and so forth. So wherein lies our greatest callings usually lies our greatest healing. Because the predicament that it's like the universe dangles a carrot for us. It's like, in order for you to get to this thing, you're going to have to heal. Because it requires you facing the things that were once dangerous in your past. And so if I want people to know you're on the right track, if you find it really hard to step into the thing you're wanting, that means it's probably for you because your nervous system is saying, I don't think that's safe. I don't think that's safe. The problem I see in the world of manifestation, for example, like manifest the life you want, is that a lot of times they'll have you or people that are doing this work feel into the thing you're desiring, right? Like meditate on it. Imagine it's happening today, which is really great. We want to do that. Bring it alive in my body, like the partner I want or the next iteration of my career. But more often than not, they're like from that place, like, okay, now go do that thing. But the problem is my nervous system is saying, I don't have the capacity to be witnessed by 5 million people yet. I don't have the capacity to have a deep, completely vulnerable relationship yet. I haven't even started dating. And so people get stuck because it's like, I'm here, here's where I want to be. And there's this huge chasm without a bridge in the middle. And then they just stay stuck there forever. And what I really want people to know is the reason that we're stuck is because if we're trying to get to that place and we only have that goal in mind, our nervous system doesn't have the capacity for it yet. We have to build our capacity to hold the good things. So it's every day taking a step, a tolerable step again. What's another step I can take? And another step and another step. And if we keep doing that, we build the bridge to where we're meant to go.
Right. So someone is saying, I want a happier life. I want to be happier in my life tomorrow. That won't happen tomorrow. But if they remember that, let's say they're manifesting that, but then if you combine what you're speaking of, then that means a happier life is by taking those little steps would be starting to look for a new job because I'm unhappy in my job, deciding to finally break up with my partner because I realize it's not serving me anymore and we have grown each other, finally confronting my best friend and telling her how she's made me feel. And those, all those little steps, or not so little, is what's in the end, within 6 months to a year or whatnot, will bring me to a happier life.
Absolutely. And the second thing that's so important to understand is, along with taking those tolerable steps, is to consistently be regulating our nervous system. This is like so imperative. It's the foundation of all healing, really.
Okay, right. So can we then dive into why exactly? Because I recall in the beginning you said how more often than not, many people have a dysregulated system without them even knowing. So can you really quickly elaborate, why is a dysregulated nervous system one of the primary markers for unhappiness in our lives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because essentially when we're dysregulated, our nervous system again is actively protecting us. Think about it like the visual of it's standing in front of us. And so if it's standing in front of us, keeping out danger, that means that the good things that we desire can't come towards us either. So right. We're in this holding pattern of not being able to feel, we can't feel good in our bodies. So chronic dysregulation means I feel I can't be in the present moment. I can't enjoy the sun on my face. I can't enjoy my animal. I can't enjoy my friends because I'm trapped in this. It's like an internal prison. And so the primary thing or most important thing to set us free is learning how to consistently regulate our nervous system via something that's called neural exercises.
Okay.
And this is really, neuroscience is so complex, but we can really simplify it in thinking about it this way. A neural exercise is like a rep at the gym. So if I'm lifting weights, let's say I'm doing curls, that's a rep, right? Every time I do a curl, the muscle fibers, they break a little bit and then they grow back stronger. So if I consistently did curls for 6 months, if my muscle got stronger, you would say, yeah, of course, because you were doing curls all the time. Our nervous system is actually the same way. So it's malleable and shapeable, meaning we can actually reshape it. So every single one of us right now, you and I and everyone listening, has something called a current vagal tone. So think of it like the tone of a muscle, but it's the tone of your nervous system. Mm-hmm. So some people listening might say, oh, when she talked about sympathetic, fight or flight, I live there. That means that that's your vagal tone. Your vagal tone is that you hang out in your sympathetic nervous system. Some people have a vagal tone where they hang out in that shutdown place. Yeah, I'm apathetic all the time. So that's the shape of your nervous system. Or some people feel frozen all the time. That's the shape of your nervous system. Or some people are regulated all the time. That's our goal. not all the time, but predominantly. So we all have a shaping of our nervous system. And what we can do through consistent neural exercises or reps at the gym, and I can give some examples, is every single time you do it, you're changing the shape of your nervous system. So that instead of being in like a heightened state of fight or flight, I have panic all the time. The more you do these reps at the gym, the less the panic is there. And so now it becomes, it's not panic anymore. It's just kind of anxiety. I don't love that. But see, that's better. I'm coming towards regulation. And then it goes from like, yeah, I don't really have anxiety so much anymore, but I feel like I can't slow down. I just feel like I'm always on the go. It's getting better and better and better. Right. So the more we do this, the more, and I've worked with thousands of people who say like, yeah, I used to not be able to sleep and it was panic all the time. I'm not panicked. I don't need Xanax anymore. Because they consistently did these reps at the gym or neural exercises. And I can get into how we do that, but this is so imperative in order to actually change what's happening in our nervous system.
Right. So step by step, and I would say one of the first steps would probably be acknowledging that you are not stopping yourself, but acknowledging that you're about to experience one of those little steps that you just mentioned, like let's say fight or flight or shut down. So if you kind of say, okay, oh, I'm shutting down. So I think acknowledging it, that's what's helped me in the past because I'm not good with confrontation. Especially with emotions. If I feel like someone has a lot of emotions, I will just shut down. And I'll say, it's fine. I don't want to move. I don't want to talk about this. And that's usually my instinct. But now, like, because I just had this occur yesterday with a friend where she did something wrong. She borrowed one of my clothes. It came back with holes in it. I mentioned it to her, and her immediate response, which we will talk about with anxious and avoidant and all that, but her immediate response was to freak out in a way where I guess she got defensive. I mean, I was just stating a fact, and she got defensive, and suddenly we were, I guess, having different conversations because I was still trying to figure out why there were holes by trying to make her feel better. Like, maybe it's a moth ate or whatever. And then she's like, you're making me feel really, like, I know you don't like talking about emotions, but you're making me feel really bad about myself, or you're making me feel really upset. And the minute she said that, I was like, whoa. Which, so I said, you know what, forget about it. I don't want to talk about this anymore. And that was my first reaction. But afterwards, I sat down and I said, okay, I'm shutting down. What will this do? Will this help our friendship? No, because I will then feel resentment. Even though she offered suggestions because she got so emotional, I just want nothing to do with that situation. But I know I will be then resentful because nothing was actually fixed. So I'm going to give myself a moment to figure things out, maybe ask a friend for advice. If I need the validation, then I'm going to do the right thing by asking for her to split the cost to buy a new item. And then I'm going to communicate it, even though it makes me uncomfortable, because I want to just move forward. And then I did that, and the outcome was positive, which I was surprised. I was so scared she was going to get emotional again. And it wasn't like that. So anyway, sorry for diving into my example. I just wanted to see if that's similar to what you were saying. Mm.
Well, that's the disconfirming experience you just gave yourself. You put that's in the database of like, oh, it's safe to have confrontation, which is beautiful. And what I'm talking about consistent neural exercises or reshaping of our nervous system is when we can, and I'll get into examples of how we do it, but when I do this, then what eventually occurs is a rupture, because that's a rupture in a relationship or disconnection, it doesn't even feel that dysregulating. I feel fine. I feel kind of okay about it because now I've actually changed the whole shape of my nervous system, and I don't even function in the world in the same way anymore. I don't have social anxiety. I don't have struggles with arguments. I feel much more at ease in these things. And that's what the consistent neural exercises I'm talking about does. And most people, they want to find a tool. They want a tool, like when they feel acute dysregulation. Like, I feel panic. Holy shit. I need to do something to not feel panic. But that's kind of like if, like, I never worked out and then I went to the gym once a month and then I said to you, why am I not strong? I don't know what's wrong. Right. Nothing works. That's what people tend to do with this work. And instead, simple thing that I want, like, invite everybody listening to do is create a list of things that are already in your life that support you to feel more present here and good. Not things that numb us, like Netflix for 5 hours or scrolling Instagram, but things that actually make me feel alive. Like, when, for me, things like petting my dog, going on a walk, being in nature, dancing, being with friends, swaying is a really regulating tool. Shaking your body is a really regulating tool. Yoga, Qigong, there's so many things that we can
do.
Screaming can be a regulating tool. I like that. So excellent, you can add that in. So create a list of anything that makes you feel good.
Not at people, by yourself. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
Okay.
Like in a room alone. You're very sweet, I can tell what you meant. So create a list of those. And then I can also give in a minute some therapeutic tools, like actual somatic therapeutic tools. But I want people to create a list of them. And then what I want you to do is set some reminders in your phone or put sticky notes around your house, maybe 5 a day, 10 a day. And when the alarm goes off or you see the sticky note, your job is to ask yourself, am I regulated or dysregulated? So do I feel good, present, and here? That means you're regulated. If you don't, means you're dysregulated. And you can ask yourself, like an advanced version is, which of those three states am I experiencing? And then all you do is you say, okay, now I'm going to do one of those things that's called a regulating resource. So one of those things that makes me feel good. I'm going to go do it right now. Mm-hmm. And you do dance to a song. You go feel the sun in your face. You do meditate for a few minutes or whatever. And then after, all you have to do is ask yourself, is anything different at all? And our job is to become an expert in nuances. So if, like laughter, you say, okay, I was feeling frustrated and I went and I screamed into a pillow or I squeezed something. And then after, I don't feel great, but I took a deeper breath. Amazing. That means something's different. Or I feel a little less anxious. Perfect. So we're looking for like a subtle shift towards better. That's mm-hmm. it. If you did that, you just successfully did what's called a neural exercise. You actually talked to your nervous system in a way it understands and it responded to you. And if you do that enough, if you do that every day, And if you do that for a month and then 2 months and then 3 months, your nervous system will reshape. And that means you get to experience much more regulation on a daily basis. This is like the most important thing to create major change in our lives.
You a second ago mentioned somatic regulation. Mm-hmm. Can you reiterate really quick what somatic regulation means?
Yeah. So somatic regulation simply means speaking the language of our nervous system. So as I said at the beginning, our nervous system lives in our bodies. It actually can't hear a verbal language because it's not connected to that. Right. So it's literally like, imagine I don't speak Mandarin, and someone was speaking Mandarin to me, and I'd be like, hi, you seem really nice. That's a beautiful language. I have no fucking clue what you're saying to me, yeah. though. I have no idea. That's what our nervous system is doing all the time when I'm saying to myself, Sarah, there's nothing to be anxious about. Calm down. My nervous system's like, can't even hear it. It's like, I don't know what you're saying. Somatic regulating tools are speaking the language of our body in the nervous system.
Ah, okay, got it. So now what are the therapeutic techniques to speak to your body using somatic tools?
Yeah. Okay. So there are different things that we want to do to regulate our nervous system based on where we are in our nervous system. So let's take one, breathing. Our breath is a direct route to regulating our nervous system. Mm. So it can support us to come into that state of good regulation, which is what we want. But you know how like breathwork classes have become like pretty popular?
Yes.
So that can sometimes be good, but there's sometimes that's actually a really bad idea and can actually dysregulate people more. When you're in your sympathetic nervous system, so fight or flight, or you're in that state of freeze where you feel like I have to, I can't. In those two states, what we want to do is shorter inhalation. So inhale for a shorter amount of time and exhale for a longer amount of time. Yeah. So a simple breathing cycle for folks is the 4-7-8 breath. So that means I inhale through my nose for 4 seconds. I hold my breath for 7 seconds. And then we exhale through our mouth like we're blowing out a candle. So very slow for 8. So 4-7-8. You're doing beautifully with that. And we do that 3 times in a row. So if you feel anxiety, frustration, fear, terror, rage, you feel stuck and freeze, that's the kind of breathing I want you to do. And it will help you. It will support you to come into regulation more. Do it 3 times in a row. If you're in that shutdown state, apathy, do not do that exercise I just named.
Okay.
Because that's going to calm your system more. We're already too calm, too shut down. So if you're in your dorsal system, that apathy shutdown, we actually want to bring energy in our body. So a simple 2-part rapid breath in and out my mouth, kind of like this. That's it. Yeah, 2 or 3 times.
Oh.
And then rest. And then you can do it again in a couple minutes. That brings energy into my body.
Wow, that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So one, if you're anxious, to calm you down. But if you're already so shut down, you don't want to even be even more disassociated.
No.
So this one brings you energy to kind of be more present.
That's right.
Wow, that is really cool. I never understood this because I think I only knew one breath work, which is the calming down.
Yeah, and you don't want to do that when you're already in that shutdown state. It'll shut you down even more. So we don't want to do that. And that's why it's so, as this work, the work that I'm an expert in, has become popularized, there's a lot of people on Instagram that are like, 4 things to regulate your nervous system. And I read them and I'm like, no, some of those things are not what you should do if you're in certain states. So it's like, as I said, different things we want to do depending on where we are.
Got it. So those are the 2 breathing techniques that can help you regulate your nervous system in the moment where you're either feeling anxious or you are feeling completely just detached and shut down.
A couple other ways, simple things that folks can do to regulate our nervous system is, one is vibrational sound really supports regulation, because think of our nervous system as having like tentacles, they're nerve endings, but they literally grasp onto every organ we have. And when we're dysregulated, they grasp on like this. Mm-hmm. So when we can make a vibrational sound, it actually loosens the nerve endings. They loosen up. And then that when that occurs, that information of safety, that's an information of safety, communicates back up to our brain that we're safe. So I like to explain that, because sometimes when I explain regulating tools, people are like, what the fuck is this? I'm just making a sound. How is this going to help me? But there's a lot of science behind it. So a simple sound, it's going to sound very weird to people probably, is the sound VOO, V-O-O. This comes from one of my mentors, Peter Levine's body of work. He's a pioneer in trauma resolution. And when we make this particular vibration in a low register, so lower than your speaking voice, it helps to those nerve endings to release and bring regulation. So I'm going to make the sound how I wouldn't want to make it, which is first like in a high-pitched sound up in my chest like this. Boo. But it's just right around here, which means it's not going down to the nerve endings where I need it to go. So instead, we want to make the sound more like this. It's kind of weird. Like I said, it's going to sound weird. And do that 3 times fully until there's no air left, and then do it again, and then one more time. And that brings incredible regulation to our nervous system in all 3 states. So that'll work across the board.
So regardless what state you are in, doing voo 3 times will kind of help you get a little closer to regulation in your nervous system.
Yeah. Yes.
That's one of the somatic practices.
Yes. A couple more I can give. One is tapping. Tapping is a really fantastic regulating tool. So when we tap on certain meridian points on our bodies, it actually can talk to the nervous system. It's talking to our nervous system. And I can quickly go through a sequence with everybody watching, and you can look on YouTube and you can find tapping sequences. But when we tap for about 10 seconds in a few different spots, so the first is outside of your hand below your pinky, for like 10 seconds with a couple of fingers. The purpose of, or what the intention should be, imagining you just got your body for the first time and you're just exploring, like, what the hell is this hand? Mm-hmm. The reason I say to do that is because more often than not, we're in our head and we're not present. So getting yourself really present, tapping maybe 10 seconds here, then 10 seconds below on the top of your hand, below your pinky and your ring finger, about 10 seconds each. Next tapping point would be above your eyebrows on both sides for about 10 seconds again. Then your cheekbones, about 10 seconds there. Then your smile lines, about 10 seconds there. Then above your top lip, about 10 seconds. Below your collarbones for about 10 seconds. And then your mid ribs on both sides for 10 seconds. If you do that, it'll bring wonderful regulation to your nervous system in all 3 states too.
Yeah, but if you're doing that in public and somebody knows Morse code,
you're right. Then you could be hired by a lot of countries. That one's harder in public, but you can do the breathing in public. You could do the voo silently, actually, or you could go to the bathroom and do it. You can do swaying is incredibly regulating. So literally allowing our body to sway left and right is bilateral movement, and that regulates. Shaking our body when we're dysregulated, that works in all 3 states as well. And there's a lot of other regulating tools, but those are just a handful that are super supportive for regulation.
I love that. That was all really helpful. It's that I just learned something new today. So that's cool that these tools are also so quick.
They're so quick. It's the response happens right now, because people will ask me, like, well, when is things going to change? And I say, in the moment. Like, if I went and deadlifted, which I do often, I wouldn't say to someone I'm working with, like a trainer, like, well, when am I going to feel something? They're like, don't you feel something right now? You just lifted 100 pounds. It happens now. And what I want people to know is, if you consistently do this every day, you do it again and again and again, this is how you change your life. This is how you reshape your nervous system. So you're not a person that's depressed all the time anymore, or you're not a person that's anxious all the time anymore. It's not mystical. And I just want people to know that, because what people tend to do is they gather more and more information. Like, I read this book and I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And then I go back into my life and I do the same shit over and over again and don't make changes. This is how you actually change it.